Welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Heather.
And today we will be discussing and reviewing Silent Night by R.L. Stine. As usual, let's talk about our fuel for this discussion. What are you drinking, Heather?
Currently, I am hydrating with good old H2O, which is something I have not been doing as of late. And I'm just surviving on coffee, and that's not wonderful for my digestive system.
So it is on brand, though.
I know. I'm trying to be better with my water intake. So I got this fancy water bottle that tells me it has like the things on the side that say, oh, it's, you know, you're 14 ounces, keep chugging and blah, blah, blah. So we'll see how that goes.
It should say on there, like, pause for bathroom break.
Honest to God, honestly. But I did, of course, have my coffee this morning, my generic caramel coffee from, but I did put a frother on my Amazon wish list for Christmas because someone on TikTok made a cold foam with heavy cream and caramel syrup. So I put the frother on my wish list because now I'm TikTok influenced.
I mean, and that'll be nice and fancy.
I know. And I'm like, well, maybe if I start doing that, I won't spend as much money on coffee as I do.
Maybe.
I'll try my best.
Sometimes it just doesn't hit the same. But
no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
What about you mean?
Well, this morning, I had to go to the UPS store to drop off the Christmas gifts to mail to my mom. But anyway, so I was like, oh, I'm out of the house. Let me get a little treat. And I had it in my mind that I wanted a Wawa hot coffee because the only hot coffee I drink is from Wawa, except today it was like 60 degrees. So it was the worst day to get a hot coffee.
I'm so over this bipolar weather.
I know. But my coffee was delicious. It was their holiday blend coffee with their hazelnut creamer. But I was sweating while I was drinking it. So
there you go.
So it backfired a little bit, but it was delicious.
Don't you hate that when you really just want a hot coffee, but then it makes you hot?
Yeah.
And it has the opposite effect of what you were looking for?
It's like when you go outside and it's freezing, you're like, oh, I could go for a hot chocolate. But then you're all warm in your car and you're like, oh, I don't want a hot chocolate anymore because I'm warm. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. I completely get where you're going with this.
So I just stick with iced coffee all year long.
That's why, honestly, because sometimes I just want that hot coffee and it's great, but then I'm sweating.
And cold iced coffee is still good after your ice melts, but hot coffee is not good when it's room temperature.
No, it's really not. That's one of the big reasons why I hate making coffee at home is because I do take a while to drink it. So then an hour in, it's cold.
Yeah.
And I could heat it up, but it's just not the same.
It's not the same. It's not.
No, it's not.
Wow. Fully booked and caffeinated problems.
Real world problems.
Well, cheers.
Cheers.
All right. So R.L. Stine, or Robert Lawrence Stine, is obviously a ridiculously famous American writer and novelist. He's often called the Stephen King of children's literature, and he's written a ridiculous number of fiction books and novellas. He began writing at 9 years old when he found a typewriter in his attic.
That's insane. I did look him up on Wikipedia just to, like, see how many books he've read or wrote, and the list was enormous. I was scrolling for hours. Just scrolling, scrolling, scrolling.
And
it just was
never
ending.
You can't even get a real number because even, I mean, I'll get into it, but I was looking up the Fear Street series, and there's, like, 15 series that were spawned off of the Fear Street series. So, like, you couldn't even get a real number if you tried.
No, you couldn't.
But I mean, when you start at 9 years old, obviously you're gonna rack them up. And he was born he's like 81 years old, so he's had some time. Anyway, so his first YA horror novel was published in 1987, but in the early 1990s, Stine's real rise to fame came when he wrote the unprecedented best-selling Goosebumps series, which sold more than 250 million copies and became a worldwide multimedia phenomenon. His other major series, Fear Street, has over 80 million copies sold.
I don't know that I read any Fear Street as a kid. I do remember getting Goosebumps from my school library, Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I read Fear Street books. Like, I can't remember.
See, I was the opposite. I read a few Goosebumps, but Fear Street was like I was obsessed. It was like my shit.
Yeah, I know that Goosebumps was where it was at for me.
Yeah. So, Stein has won numerous awards and has been named the best-selling children's book series author of all time. Which I believe.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And here's just a little snippet of a Q&A with R.L. Stein. The question was, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you enjoy traumatizing young children? And R.L. Stein said, I enjoy getting children to read. Traumatizing them is just a bonus.
Wow. I like that.
Such a perfect answer.
That is a good answer.
So where Goosebumps was definitely more of a preteen elementary school target audience, Fear Street is the young teen version. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, early high school. The Fear Street series started in 1989. And as I was saying, the volume of books is unbelievable. The original Fear Street has 51 books, but then there are various spin-offs. New Fear Street, Return to Fear Street, Super Chiller, Cheerleaders, The House of Evil. It goes on mm-hmm. and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
All of this to say, I was obsessed with the entire series. I read every single one of the originals and the older spinoffs. So there was a book trader a few blocks from my house when I was younger, and my mom and I would go every week and track down every single title. And I would mark them off I read so fast even when I was young. So I would go through them so fast. And my mom was like, you have to slow down.
Please stop.
You can't get all of these books. Books are expensive. But I mean, this has to be where my love of thrillers and horror really started. Oh,
absolutely.
Because it's so, and we'll get into it, but this is so the guideline for the thrillers that I love now.
Absolutely.
And this was like those formative preteen years where it's so much is influencing your brain hole, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So this book specifically, Silent Night, is the first of a three-part series within the Fear Street Super Chiller world. It was published in November 1991.
I saw that. I like so looked back. I was like, this is insane.
It's almost as old as us.
Yeah, literally. It came out 2 years after my birth and a year after yours. So, mm-hmm.
Which is baffling. All right, so here is our book summary from Storygraph. Welcome to Fear Street. Don't listen to the stories they tell you about Fear Street. Wouldn't you rather explore it yourself and see if its dark terrors and unexplained mysteries are true? You're not afraid, are you? Don't open that present. If only Reva Dalby had listened to that warning. But beautiful, cold Reva won't listen to anyone. Reva thinks she can have whatever and whoever she wants. After all, her daddy owns Dalby department stores. Now someone has some surprises in store for her. Robbery? Terror? Even murder? Someone wants to treat Reva to a holiday she'll never forget. Holiday cheer quickly turns to holiday chills for Reva. Someone is stalking her. Someone is trying to get to her. Her money can't help her. No one can. After all, who can you turn to when murder comes gift-wrapped? Is this the written description of a lifetime horror movie?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
100%.
Yeah, definitely.
So good. When murder comes gift-wrapped.
Chef's kiss.
Oh, wait, there was... Hold, please. Cover of the book. Where is it? Oh. The cover of the book says, Happy Holidays. You're dead.
Oh, yeah.
They're not leaving anything to the imagination here.
No, it's on brand right now.
All right, so let's get into it. So we meet our main character, Reva Dalby, who is an absolute nightmare.
Yes.
She enjoys humiliating people, and I would say that's her favorite and possibly only hobby.
She's Regina George in the 90s.
1,000%. But no one wants to be her.
No, like no one really wants to be her friend either.
Mm-mm. Her dad owns the Dalby's department store where Reva works. It's clear that they're very well off, and the dad is trying to instill some type of responsibility into Reva by having her work, but that's not working at all.
Mm-mm.
So imagine dealing with a sales associate like Reva during the holidays.
No, I don't want to.
Couldn't be me.
Her superior asks her to do something, and she's like, no, I just did my nails. I'm good, thanks.
Yeah. Or a customer will be like, excuse me, and she'll just turn around.
Ignore them. That did make me laugh, though. That yeah. one, when the gentleman was like, excuse me, and she just was like,
and she's like, la, la, la.
I can't hear you.
Like, staring at her nails, putting her lipstick on. So someone is messing with Reva because she starts getting gifts delivered to her at work, and they're not fun Christmas surprises. The first is a needle in her lipstick, which cuts her lip when she goes to use it. The second is a gift wrap perfume bottle filled with blood, which seems kind of harmless enough, but the problem is Reva can't figure out who would be doing this to her because she gets threatened on a daily basis.
She does.
Mm-hmm. So the red herrings are tripping over themselves.
They truly are.
It's just, there's no way to narrow it down.
Nope.
So then we have a parallel storyline which follows Reva's cousin, who Reva doesn't really like spending time with because Pam being poor bothers Reva.
And also I think because she's well-liked and really pretty. Yeah. She's blonde.
And she's like, I don't understand why people like her because she's poor.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes her uncomfortable that Pam reminds her, just by existing, that Reva has more money than her.
Yeah.
And then she's also jealous of Pam because Pam still has a mom, and Reva's mom died.
Yeah.
Which, like, okay, Reva, it's called therapy, but it's the 90s, so I get it.
Yes, yes, accurate.
So Pam asks Reva if she can work at the department store for Christmas to earn some money, and Reva makes up some excuse, but of course it wasn't a real excuse, and when Pam finds out that Reva is messing with her, she's pissed. Pissed.
Capital P.
Real pissed. So Pam starts spending time with her equally unfortunate friends, Mickey and Clay. Mickey's dad was laid off from Dalby's after working there for a very long time, and he's not taking it well. So add more to the list of enemies of Dalby's. And Clay is a real bad boy. And he ropes Pam and Mickey into his life of petty theft until Clay has a plan to do a real burglary.
A real burglary.
I was dying when they are in that convenience store and the worker is like, empty your pockets. I know you stole something. Mm-hmm. And they're like, Pam and Mickey are like, oh my God, that guy was so unfair. I can't believe that. And Clay's like, huh, no, I stole stuff though.
I know. He's actually the definition of bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
But he plays it off so well, and they're kind of like, well, no, you would never do that. You would never steal. And it's like, what kind of vibes does he give you that makes you think that he's not doing petty theft? Because I got the vibe straight away.
1,000%. And they don't even know him that well.
No.
So his plan is to rob Dalby's department store, and they have someone on the inside helping, so it's not even a real robbery.
No, it's a fake robbery.
Which is baffling, but this felt so believable high school to me, honestly, because, of course, this is a horrible idea, but yeah. Mickey and Pam go along with it because they're kind of scared of Clay, but they also want to impress him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so typical high school.
Oh, yeah. You know? 100%.
But, of course, something goes wrong because, duh. Their inside helper is nowhere to be found, and when they're confronted by a security guard, a chase ensues, and Clay whips out a gun, and the security guard is shot.
Also, okay, where did Clay get a gun? Like, number one. I'm just curious.
Great question. Curious
about that.
And also, the fact that they get there, and they're like, okay, we're gonna steal, like, 50 TVs, and, like, all this other shit. Because Pam has a big trunk. How big is her trunk? Is she driving a 53-foot semi? Also, he's like, but we didn't bring anything to carry the stuff in. Oh my God, that
sent me. When he's like, where are we going to put all these VCRs? And like, oh, we'll just go back and forth. And I'm like, this is not a good plan. You are clearly teenagers because this is not well thought through.
But he knew to bring a gun.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with this burglary. But I mean... Mm-hmm. Knew that was coming. So yeah. They somehow get away into Pam's getaway car, which also usually doesn't start on the first or even second try, so I'm not sure why this is the getaway car, but okay, go off. And the most ridiculous part about this is that they get in the car and they're driving away seemingly free and clear, and they don't say a single word to each other.
It's just silence, which silent night. But
I didn't see that one. That's good. You got me. But we literally get Pam thinking somehow she drove herself home. And then next paragraph, she's waking up the next morning.
Yeah.
Like,
wild.
You could have dedicated an extra page or two.
I know.
She's so just home, weird.
Miraculously.
And wouldn't she just drop them off and, like, just open the door and push them out? I don't know. I had a lot of questions. And I was like, oh, okay, it's the next morning. We're here. So, next morning on the radio, they're talking about the break-in, and they say the guard died after being fatally shot, and $25,000 was stolen from a safe. And Pam is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Clay killed that guy. And then she's like, wait, but we didn't take any money, so they don't have the facts straight. So she calls Clay, and of course he heard the radio too, because of the 90s, and he says his gun wasn't even loaded. Someone else shot the mall security guard at the exact moment that Clay was pointing a gun towards him.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
Baffling.
And also, we should have known too that the mention of the safe being robbed pre-robbery, when his inside guy was like, no, we're not allowed to touch the safe. It's only items from the store.
Mm-hmm.
So then you get that little, oh no, but money was taken from the safe. So you immediately know that this was a botched job on purpose.
Mm-hmm. So obviously tensions are mounting. Reva's still getting her weird gifts. The latest is a mannequin in a box.
That was weird.
It was very weird. Because she thought it was a body for like 0.01 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clearly a mannequin. And then the same with the blood in the perfume bottle. It wouldn't have been a problem if she didn't drop the perfume bottle.
No.
Anyway, so combined with the robbery, she starts thinking that maybe everything is a little more serious than she thought.
Mm-hmm.
So Reva confronts her ex-boyfriend Hank and accuses him of messing with her with these gifts. She does this half-ass apology so that they can have a truce.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, like, I guess I'm sorry for humiliating you and treating you like shit, but since I apologized, stop sending me stuff.
I know.
And Hank says, this is the best part of the whole book. Hank says, everyone hates you. Everyone. Mm-hmm. I can think of 10 people who hate you enough to put a needle in your lipstick.
Savage.
Way harsh, Hank.
Like,
but also true.
No, yeah, he did not hold back. And he's like, name one friend. And Ree was like, I can't.
She was like, he's like, And I'm like, I just got here and I could name 10 people also.
Honestly.
And then Reva's inner monologue is like, Hank isn't a good enough actor to lie about this convincingly. So even him being taken off the suspect list has to be because of his shortcomings.
I can't. She's
horrible.
So mean.
Horrible. Poor Hank, honestly. He just wants to play with his electronics.
He does.
But also, how did he actually like her in the first place is a great question.
It actually is. Because I don't know that she really has any redeeming qualities.
I haven't seen a single one.
No. Me neither.
It's one of the many mysteries in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So then Reva receives another large box, and this time it's her latest love interest, Mitch's dead body. So this escalated quickly.
Very quickly. Very quickly, actually.
And Detective Reva is on it. And she discovers that around the time Mitch was probably put in the box, Rob, the department store Santa, wasn't at his post. And it's because Reva is a terrible person that she figures this out. She knows that Rob doesn't need pillow padding for his Santa costume, and the Santa at the North Pole post had a pillow pad. So she shares this with her dad, and the cops come and arrest Santa.
In front of all the children.
What the fuck? The children are distraught. Especially after they rip Santa's beard off.
I know.
This is so damn traumatic.
Such like, ruining the whole illusion.
Sir, lead him to the break room. Mm-hmm. They straight up barged into the North Pole.
And also, and he's a like, teenage kid. Can we also just, like, bring that to light as well? It's not like he's some hardened criminal. It's not like he's Billy Bob Thornton in Bad Santa? Like, he's not. He's literally a child.
And the fact that they have no proof except that he wasn't at his post for, like, a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe he was taking a lunch break.
But no questions are asked.
Yeah, no questions, because Reva's so reliable.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out Rob is Pam's boyfriend, Foxy.
That was a fun twist. I didn't see that one coming.
I didn't either. And I thought it was so funny, because it's like, I loved the reveal of it. But I'm like, wow, more books for the twist should just change people's names.
Yeah, honestly.
Because easiest way to bury
the
lead.
You got me. Didn't also see that
the fact
coming.
That it's such a specific, like, he's called Foxy, so he can't be, like, this overweight teddy bear guy.
That's another thing. I was like, oh, that's actually really clever to call him Foxy, because
it's not like they were calling him Teddy, like a teddy bear or
exactly.
something.
The word Foxy, you wouldn't think of him. You'd think of some kind of, like, jock big guy.
Exactly.
Not
so that's,
this
that
overweight
made it
nerd.
Better.
Yeah, I know.
So Foxy/Rob allegedly killed Mitch to get back at Reva. This is a little murky.
Yes.
And because they had been seen fighting earlier that day, which was unrelated but kind of related, it's all pretty convoluted.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't really understand. I understood why Foxy was going after Mitch, because Mitch was blackmailing Pam.
Yes.
But why did they think that Rob killed Mitch?
Because of the fight that she walked in on in the storeroom.
But they had no idea what the fight was about. They just thought that it was because...
She just thought because she saw the violence of them arguing.
Okay, so she didn't have the motive. She just had...
Oh, they were fighting, so this must have been the precursor to the murder.
Okay. Okay.
That's my assumption.
Okay.
I mean,
that makes sense. Yes.
I feel like once we got to the ending, it was very rushed, and there were a lot of loopholes.
Sure were. We'll get to it. Okay, so Pam tells Reva it couldn't have been Rob. And they immediately make up, even though Reva has been horrible to Pam for years.
Mm-hmm.
But as they're driving home, Reva obviously has to go back for her purse. And who's there? None other than another man with a gun.
Yes. Where are all these guns coming from?
Honestly, are they selling them at the department store?
They might be at this point.
They might be. So Mr. Weekly, Mickey's dad, who was the robber who took the $25,000 and also killed the security guard. And the reason that he was robbing at the same time is because this motherfucker, Maywood, the inside helper security guard, where is Maywood in all this?
I agree with this.
We've never met him. And he has a lot to answer for.
I almost thought that Maywood was Mickey's dad, and that was just, like, his name, and that maybe Clay never really knew him, so it's kind of like, maybe it was, like, but I guess it's the 90s, so it wouldn't be, like, an online thing.
Yeah, because he would have had to actually talk to... We never even find out what connection Clay has to Maywood in the first place.
And, like, did Maywood take the money and run? Because it doesn't seem like Mickey's dad even had the money. Because then Maywood was conveniently calling out of work.
Yeah, he just called out on the day of the double robbery. I'm a little unsure.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of loopholes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of questions.
Because I understand... Okay, pause. I'll get to this in a minute. Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself. So, Reva makes a run for it. Dodges a couple bullets. Then the
which
most
how, by the way, unless his dad was drunk, which
by
he is
this
all the time.
Point,
so
you should know to stop asking questions.
This is also true.
So the most ridiculous and perfect thing happens, which this whole thing, I'm just seeing it as a Lifetime movie in my brain. It's so perfect. Mr. Wakely dives for Reva, but she's up against the railing of the balcony, and he's so high and so horizontal that as she ducks, he sails right over her and over the railing. Then he lands on the Christmas tree, which electrocutes him, then shorts out.
I'm surprised I didn't catch on fire.
Flawless execution. Honest no notes. God. Incredible.
Incredible.
So yeah, that's the end.
Yes.
Okay. Let's dive in. So I get why Mr. Wakely wanted to rob the department store and get his $25,000 because he doesn't have any money.
Yeah. And he was kind of, it seemed like, fired unfairly.
Exactly. But why did he want to hurt Reva? Why did he kill Mitch?
Because, okay, wait. All right. So he accidentally kills the security guard because the security guard was pointing a gun at his son, which it didn't seem like he was pointing it at his son. It seemed like he was pointing it at Clay. But he also might have been drunk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he shoots the security guard and kills him.
Oh, and Mitch was there.
Mitch was there. Mm-hmm. So,
Mitch
is calling Reva and whispering weirdly into the phone saying, I saw what you did. Give me the money. And then eventually, I don't even know. Like, this was weird too when Mitch, like, comes up behind Pam and, like attacks her in, like, the streets.
Yeah, and, like, behind a bush or something. And then Foxy just happens to show up.
And then he's like, oh, if you turn around, you're going to regret this. And I'm like, but I didn't find Mitch's character to be, like, this brusque, like, asshole. So that didn't really work for me. And then, so then Pam discovers that Mitch is the one that's blackmailing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was going to assume that maybe Pam, Mickey, and Clay are having this conversation and maybe Mickey's dad heard it, and so he knows that Mitch is blackmailing them, so he has to kill Mitch, because Mitch knows, and then Reva shows up, so now he has to kill Reva.
But he was the one pranking Reva?
No.
Who was pranking Reva? I don't remember.
Foxy.
Oh.
So it seems that because Reva leaves the store and then comes back because she forgot her purse, and that's when she runs into Mr. Wakely.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to kill her because there's another someone who now knows what happened, okay. I think.
Yes, because I was like,
I don't know. Listen, it all happened so fast. Once one thing was discovered, it just was kind of like, you know, a big snowball down an avalanche. It was just rolling, 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 and then we got to the end, and then it was realistically an unsatisfying ending, but I'm not surprised. This is not Pulitzer Prize fiction, so it's fine. But
100%. This is.
But I
was going to say this isn't the kind of thing that you need a pin board with a red string, but apparently you do.
You kind of do, actually, because there's so many. You have to give it to R.L. Stine with his creativity, because he makes you work for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're sitting here dissecting this book and still confused. So.
That's very true. And I didn't see it coming.
No. No, it came gift wrapped. We didn't see what was inside.
Happy holidays, you're dead. Even though the only person who dies is Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch. Well, and the security guard.
Oh, yeah.
There was two deaths.
That's true. Okay, all right, we got a two-body count.
Also, didn't the brother annoy you a little bit, the little baby brother? Like, I was thinking that he was going to be some kind of evil thing in this novel, because he was just like, take me to see Santa.
He was so unnecessary.
Yeah.
And it just showed even more how much of a bitch Reva was.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I know.
Oh, I love my brother, but he's so annoying, and I promised to take him to see Santa 45 times, but I keep not taking him to see Santa.
Mm-hmm.
So his entire role in the book was just so that he could sit on Santa's lap and see that Santa was wearing a pillow under his shirt.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that. So, what's...
There was also that line in the book that kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies, which I don't think he meant it nefariously or grossly, but when Reva says to her brother, she's like, yeah, Santa likes when boys and girls sit on his lap. Did you catch that?
Sure, yeah, didn't. Yeah, don't like that.
Because Michael's like, oh, does he like, you know, does he like it when He said something along those lines.
Sit on his lap or something.
Yes. And Reva's like, yeah, like he loves when boys and girls sit on his lap. And I was like, oh, no, that's not properly said.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, as a kid reading it, I'm not going to read it that way. Mm-hmm. But as an adult,
I'm going to read it.
As like an innuendo, when I don't think it was meant to be, and I'm not saying that it was.
Yeah.
But reading that as a woman in my mid-30s, I was like, oh, no, 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 no. Backtrack. R.L. Stine, don't make me cancel you. Like, everything's fine.
Yeah, but then the more you dive into it, you're like, oh, just the idea of all these Santas just having kids sit on their... Never mind. Let's not even go down that road.
Considering I did watch, like, A Nonsense Christmas with Sabrina Carpenter today on Netflix... And she makes one of the skits is that she's dating Santa. And I was like, oh, no.
No. Don't love that.
Yeah. So.
All right. So what is your opinion of Reva? Because we're meant to believe that on the last page of the book, she's reformed. Yes. She has a transformation. She's new and improved Reva.
She realizes because she hasn't processed her mom's death. Which, obviously, that was also very rushed and didn't make sense to me. But she was an annoying character, which I think is the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's so back and forth. Like, she's breaking up with Hank in the beginning, and then she feels bad about it. But then she wants to, like, be a bitch to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also wants to see him get angry. And then he gets angry, and then she gets scared. Like, just like...
And then she wants Mitch, but then she gets Mitch too easily. She gets upset about it.
Yeah. I'm like, girl, make up your damn mind. She just cannot make a decision to save her life.
And what about Pam?
Pam was an interesting character. I didn't hate her. And I can understand why she's doing what she's doing, because she comes from the other side of the tracks. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, she's obviously framed to be more likable. Mm-hmm. Than Reva,
which I think is the point.
Mm-hmm. But she also has this kind of, I mean, they're opposite in every way, because Pam has basically no backbone. She can't, you know, stand up for herself. She just kind of goes along with what other people are saying, even though she knows that it's a horrible idea. She can't even tell her boyfriend about what's going on because she knows that it's wrong.
Uh-huh.
Did you find it believable that Mr. Wakely was the killer?
No, but it makes sense, because I could see why obviously he'd want to rob the store. But I'm also conflicted as to why he would kill an old coworker that he said he liked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, don't shoot him. Maybe like shoot at the ceiling to cause a distraction. Like, he didn't have to shoot.
Or like shoot him in the leg.
Yeah, don't shoot to kill kind of thing.
And also, he was drunk all the time.
Yeah, I know. So how is he
pulling off this robbery with being fostered?
That too. And he can kill the security guard who's far away, but he can't shoot Reva, who's in within 5 inches of him.
I mean, maybe he was a little more sober the night of the robbery.
Potentially.
Why was he even in the department store when Reva went back to get her purse?
I don't remember. It might have been said, but I can't recall.
I feel like there was so much jammed into this very short book.
Yes, and that I'm telling you, the last like 15-20 pages, I got to a point and I realized I only had 3 pages left, and I was like, there's no way that I only have 3 pages left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same thing. I was like, I'm almost done and I don't know what happened yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was both so much and so little at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else we should discuss before we get to these ratings?
I just want to say a little fun fact that I didn't know, that I was, which also was why I looked at the year that this book came out, because I was reading like the little blurb about R.L. Stine in the back of the novel. I had no idea that he was the head writer for Eureka's Castle, which was one of my favorite shows. As a kid, my mom told me, I don't remember liking it, but my mom told me as a kid, like, that was one of my favorite shows that I watched all the time. And so I, like, went back to the front of the book because I'm like, when the hell was this book written? Mm-hmm. And I saw it was 91. But yeah, I had no idea that R.L. Stine wrote on Eureka's Castle, and I love that.
And it's so not in line with his like fiction writing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember knowing that because I thought it was so weird.
Yeah. So that was a fun little
tidbit. Does this man have enough time?
I know. That I just didn't know. Because like I listened to his podcast episode too when he was on Armchair, and which I really liked that too. And that I don't recall that even being brought up, which, you know, I'm not saying that it would.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, oh, this is fun to learn.
Yeah. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Such a long, successful career. It's insane.
I know. And he's still going. He's not mm-hmm. even done.
And just the fact, I mean, there's been so many adaptations of Goosebumps. Even the mm-hmm. Fear Street was on Netflix.
And like, now they have, like, the Jack Black Goosebumps movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. it's just going to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so our rating scale is Mall Santas.
Oh! I don't even feel like it's fair to rate this book, but I'll do it.
I know. I agree with you, but we're going to do it anyway.
Maybe I'll rate on my enjoyability instead of, like, the book.
You have to.
I feel like it's not fair to rate this book.
Mm-hmm. All right, so how many Mall Santas are you giving this for its enjoyability?
I'll give it 3. I'll give it 3 Mall Santas. Because it did have me enraptured. I did need to know. It was a page-turner.
Mm-hmm. It's such a quick read.
No, it truly was. And it was actually kind of nice because it's not a book that you have to clearly have to like think while you're reading, which is nice because I don't have the mental stability right now mm-hmm. to concentrate on books.
Oh, it's a perfect
this is a great choice
Christmas yeah. season palette cleanser uh-huh. just like our last book.
Yep.
I love this book. I can't even deny it because it has such a nostalgic feeling yes. for me.
For you, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I can also vividly see myself in a department store during the Christmas season. It's so cheesy and so exaggerated, but I 100% get why I was so invested as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has the twists and it has the turns and it's so 90s, but I love it. So I will say this definitely wasn't my favorite of the series of, you know, Fear Street in general, because Reva is just so horrible and
yes.
none of the characters are likable at all.
No, they're not.
So I agree. I gave this 3 Mall Santas also. And it's also thinking about it through, because this isn't just YA, like, because we read YA that's dark and, mm-hmm. you know, just as horrible as some of yeah. the adult fiction we read. This is preteen mystery horror.
Yeah.
And when you read it under that lens, like you were saying, some of this is very graphic. Some of this is scary. Yeah, reading it,
I was kind of like, wow, I'm kind of surprised that this is a teenage book. Mm-hmm.
And this is tame compared to the rest of them because most of the other ones are more horror and this is more like mystery thriller. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of the other ones have a lot of the series that were branched off of Fear Street have more like paranormal stuff.
Okay.
So I'm like, these books were definitely scary, especially for the age group and for the time. So yeah, I think it was such a good Christmas. It was so Christmassy.
It was so Christmassy.
The fact that this guy died by being electrocuted on the Christmas tree. Incredible.
Gotta so love good. It. What a way to go.
What a master, R.L. Stein. I get it. Wow. How did he come up with so many ideas?
That's the thing, though. Because obviously he's knocking these books out. And they're still... I do feel like it's that they're rushed, which obviously if he's writing so many of them, that makes sense. But still the creativity that he brings to them is unparalleled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, how many thrillers do we read and we were still didn't see these twists coming?
Foxy got me, man. Did Foxy not got envision me. Foxy being Rob.
Yeah, well, now he can't use that one again for another book, so.
No, he can't. he used it up on this one.
He used it up for The Silent Night. Wow. Okay. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that this was a good one to end our year on.
Completely agree. Mm-hmm. This is what we needed.
Agreed.
Well, that's all we have for you today. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you're using. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcalfpod@gmail.com. Also be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at Fully Booked Calf Pod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out, and remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked.
Bye! Bye.